Welcome to Medroom Chronicles. Join nurses and other care providers as they let you in on discussions usually reserved for the privacy of the locked medication room. In this weekly nursing podcast, the filters come off and we tell it like it is. Your hosts, nurses Adrienne Benning and Andrew Craig, are here to educate and entertain on all things in the nursing world. This podcast is intended for nursing students, nurses, nursing assistants, and other care providers. Non-medical folk will probably get a kick out of us too. If you like what you hear, subscribe and share. Happy nursing, folks. Welcome to Medroom Chronicles. I am here, per usual, with my buddy Andrew. Andrew, hey, how you doing?
Fantastic. How are you doing, Adrian?
Good. I woke you up from a sound nap.
Well, we had an appointment, and I totally nearly blew you off, and Sarah comes room, and she's like, what's going on? I'm like, what do you mean, what's going on? And sure enough, I overslept 40 minutes. So here we are. Sorry about that. Yeah.
It's okay. Initially, I had like 5 seconds of like, what the fuck? And then after that, I was like, if I had a dollar for every time I had done that to somebody because I needed sleep, I would be able to take us off dinner. So honestly, I'm not upset. It happens. I'm glad you did wake up because the amount of time that we have to record is, you know, it's precious and limited. So, hi.
Yes.
So, traveler talk. We were just talking about this off recording a minute ago. You had posted a plea to your group asking folks to submit some questions for us for this recording, and nobody did. But I don't take offense to that because you have such lively, energetic, robust conversation in traveler talk that It got buried, and that's okay because that means that people got a lot of things on their mind and a lot of communication is happening. So tell me, you said you have some interesting things to say about this.
Yes, we're exploding right now. We have 4,000 to 300 members.
Yeah,
over a little over a month, Adrian. It's been wild and awesome, a very stressful, very time consuming. And I wanted to share with you some interesting statistics that I just found out about my group, because you do have this section about it's the group insights that Facebook provides you organically or by default. And we've had over 1,000 posts. We've had over 10,000 comments. We've had over 43,000
That's amazing.
Isn't it? In just a short period of time.
Yeah. And, you know, we've kind of said it a few times. If you build it, they'll come. If there's a need for something and that need is not being met and you open up a space for that need to be met, people are going to jump all over it. So congrats on the group and the growth. I've been participating a little bit as appropriate, but I'm not a traveler, so I don't know about a lot of this stuff, but I really enjoy reading about it and seeing the engagement and seeing like the number of people. I've also really liked seeing the conflict resolution. There hasn't been much, but there was one post that I saw that somebody was like, everybody's bitching on here just like everybody everywhere else. And instead of people being like, nah, get out of here, shut up, people were like, what can we do? What did we miss? Yeah. Like, we must have missed something because that's not the spirit of this. So I thought it was great to see that like the like warm fuzzies were occurring organically without you as the Wizard of Oz stepping in and being like, don't do that. So I'm glad to see a bit of self-regulation, little bit of filtration of the fish tank. I really like that.
Yeah. At first, when I started the group, I had to be the wizard, right? I had to remind people about communication and what we're doing here. And this is about change. And now I think what people are learning is that there is a different way to communicate online. You know, I'm really learning that communicating via Facebook with written communication with a passionate subject is an art. And we all need to reevaluate how we type things. I'm learning that people are themselves. If they got out of hand, they're checking each other. But I think what's really happening is people are changing the way they communicate, which that is pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's impressive to see. It's I'm kind of at a loss for words because I'm like, wow, yeah, that's a lot of growth in a very short amount of time. And it's so niche too. It's not like you can just get the masses rolling on in. Like, these are 4,000 and some people that are just traveling healthcare professionals. So, I mean, it goes to show that that when you bring a group together in a good place, that they can actually accomplish a lot in terms of like discussion, problem solving, sharing of information and education. So kudos.
I want to it's probably like a 60-40 split. 40% recruiters, and then of that 40%,
oh yeah,
there are anywhere from client managers, which is like the liaison between the agency and division managers, business development people, marketing people, all the way up to VPs, CEOs, and presidents of companies. I know of at least three that are part of the group that had multi-million dollar companies. So it's like, it's the gamut. It's like everywhere from the bottom tier person, so to speak, the low totem pole, all the way to the chief and everything in between. So it's really fascinating to see the real challenge with being in a position like this with a growing group that's niche is, how do you monetize that? How do you do that with ethics and integrity? And true, that is the challenge that I'm finding because, again, I keep in mind, we've talked about this, the Wayne's World thing. You know, I'm not trying to plaster corporate sponsors all over my stuff. But in a world that it seems like so many people do that, how is something that while still maintaining your vision and integrity?
I imagine that comes with a whole set of challenges that, a lot of us probably can't even imagine thoroughly, but also at the same time, like there's so much more you can do with a little bit of capital or a platform, even if there's not an exchange of money or goods that's exchanged. Even getting the platform of some of these larger entities can be really helpful. But it's true. You have to do it with integrity. You have to know who you've got vouching for you or who you're kind of linking yourself to, because you want to make sure that, they not only do you retain as much creative control as you can, if that's what you want to do, but also that it's true that you're not throwing your voice behind something that's contrary to what you believe or what your mission is or, whatever. So what is the topic du jour? I mean, this is the thing. I've got a list of about 8 million topics that I want to talk about. But then when it comes time to record, I'm either like, oh, I want to research that a little better, or, oh, I'm saving that topic for a particular person that I want to talk to. But one thing that we haven't done, we did a few episodes of our pet peeves in nursing. And I really feel like maybe it's time that, especially while we're both in good places, we should talk about the things we love about nursing. You feel like you can do that?
I could probably scrounge up a couple of things from the depths. I can find it down there.
I'm doing this on the fly too. So I only have one that's like my go-to answer from when we planned on recording this from before. Yeah. But yeah, there's plenty of stuff that I love.
I tell you what, you have one solid answer in mind. I will start with my answer, or one that comes off of my mind as well here. And it really is that nursing, despite what you believe, has so many opportunities available to you beyond the bedside than you could ever imagine. And obviously, I'm a supporter of the online thing, but I'm a firm believer that our clinical experience gives us the right and the knowledge to take that and create something of your own. The online world is so valuable, and I think not enough nurses tap into it. I see a little bit. There's a growing population of nurse entrepreneurs online. Mm-hmm. Talk about like content writers or coaches even nursing YouTubers that have grown a population, and they do speaking and then they do all kinds of consulting. And so that's just one facet, and that's really relevant to my life. I started simply with my cell phone 4.5 months ago, and I've gone to zero to having a substantial Facebook group. Granted, I came into a very specific niche, which helped, but it just shows you that if you believe in something, you can do it. And I think not enough nurses get out of their traditional mindset of I need to be a med-surg bedside nurse forever. And I encourage you to look beyond that if you're wanting more, if you're craving more, if you're not satisfied with your current situation.
And I feel like this, I mean, shit, we could talk about this for an hour or two, but just the idea of like there being jobs that don't even exist yet, you know, that a lot of people are creating these new jobs because they see a need. And so I think it's really interesting. I had no idea that nurses did some of the things that they do. Some of the more obvious stuff away from the bedside, like in the legal field or like in the consulting realm. But it's true. Like people are here's the thing. Regardless, I mean, there might be a point where you're so – no, that's not even true. There's no point in your nursing career at which you don't have something to bring to the table, okay? Mm-hmm. Because even if you are green as hell and you are on orientation, you haven't been really working on your own very long, you still have the perspective of a new nurse coming into the industry. What's broken? What's working? What systems are in place to support nurses? What are the difficulties of transitioning from student to nurse? There's like never, and then, you know, all the way through up to the seasoned nurse that can talk at great length about many, many aspects of patient care, evidence-based practice, research. I mean, the list goes on and on. So I think that it's great that, and I also think it dismisses all of those haters that are like, well, why are you an authority on this? Because when you do something 40 hours a week or 36 hours a week or 70 hours a week, depending on where you work, even mm-hmm. if you've only been doing it for a number of months, think of how many hours, think of how many dressing changes, how many meds passed, how many conflicts averted. Think about all of the things, like people are like, oh, you've only been a nurse a year. What? Yeah, that's a year longer than a nurse who just started. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, a year and a half longer than somebody who's just doing their last round of clinicals. So I think it's incredible that at any point in your career, you have something that you can bring to the community. And that can lead to jobs, you know?
For sure. I wanted to squash the myth that just because a person doesn't have the experience in doesn't mean you can't do greatness. And
right.
I think the assumption is that you don't know enough or you're not experienced enough. And that's just complete crap. And I think what I've learned about being so public about as I am, and I do that very intentionally as far as my transparency. I talk a lot about my motives and my thinking to the public so people are very aware of what I'm doing. Because I think we need more of that in our society. I think secrecy mm-hmm. and lack of transparency erodes trust, and I wanted to be the direct opposite of that.
We don't nurse alone, so we shouldn't be isolated, and you know, we should have community about us because really mm-hmm. it's about working with other people, even people that you probably don't like. But I didn't mean to derail your train of thought there.
No, that's okay. I have this kind of, this is the equivalent of a third shift brain right now. We've discussed this in previous podcasts.
Well,
so
yeah.
Bear with me if I'm a little like zombified on my end. If I sound a little high, it's not because I've been smoking weed. It's because I'm indeed kind of a sleepy zombie right now.
Been sleeping. No, and actually I haven't been awake for very long, but I had the jump on you because I was able to like actually shower and mm-hmm. make myself look like a real person. And then as soon as we're done with this call, I'm going to shovel food into my face because I've got a 12-hour shift ahead of me. Yeah. So that's absolutely number one on our list of things that we love. Is it – what's the Reading Rainbow theme song? Like, you can go twice as high. Yeah, you can do
– Yes.
Oh yeah, it's like the bridge or whatever. I can go anywhere. Yeah, that's nursing, the nursing rainbow.
Yes, I want to just say before we moved on that Our clinical culture is very oppressive to nursing creativity. It doesn't allow us to be ourselves because we're so heavy-handed in protocols, procedures, evidence-based practice, and just the
professionalism,
general.
Professionalism,
yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah. And I just want to encourage people that are thinking about, you know, doing their own thing, you know, in a different avenue, that it is okay for you to be you. And I'll give you an example. Recently, I was accused of being unprofessional. I wrote a post about it. In fact, I made it an ad on Facebook. I boosted it. Did you see that post?
I did. Yeah, I did.
What did you think?
I'm right there with you. I'm like, yeah. You know what? I'm like the F-bomb nurse. Yeah. And while that's highly unprofessional, you have any idea? Yeah, quote unquote unprofessional. And here's the thing. I'm not going to be like loosey-goosey in patient care. I'm not going to be like dropping F-bombs with my patients. But the point is that I'm not going to restrict myself to create this air of like, whatever. This is who I am as a person. I'm more professional when I'm at the bedside. But also, if I have a patient that I'm going to match how they're talking to me. If I have a patient that's talking to me in like very casual, like, you know, blunt terms, I'm not going to be rude to them. But I'm also not going to be like, whoa. I don't want to get too aside. Who am I kidding? This is going to go a little astray. But I had a patient once who had a patient and her family member, her spouse, had a horrible, horrible experience at this other hospital. I mean, it's such a specific story. I can't recount details, but it was, they just had, like, she almost died because people weren't paying attention. And so this couple, they assigned me to this couple, and the charge nurse was like, they will love you if you can just, and they made the joke, this wasn't real, but the charge made the joke, like, if you could like flash your tattoo and maybe put in a bigger nose ring, they might like you a little better. I went in and did something, and I can't remember what I was doing, but I said, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to follow the rules. And they said, we hate people that follow the rules. People that follow the rules got us into trouble. And it took me a little while to like win them over, but then they were finally like, oh, okay, you were trying to make a good impression because you thought we were pissed, but really you are someone who's able to think outside the box and advocate even when the algorithm says A, B, C, D. Yes. Like, you can recognize when protocols don't help the patient. Right. And I'm not advocating that people ignore protocols. I'm just saying, like, you need to be able to have your own voice and know how to advocate for your patients when they need advocacy. For some people, that does mean they're very professional and concise. And other people, that means they go to the doctor that they've worked with for years and they say, what the hell are we doing? Let's fix this. So I think that you need to find your voice and your ability to like say, to like talk to other people that way, you know, like communicate with your colleagues, meet them where they are.
Oh yeah. I think that when you talk about finding your voice, I think that it comes with a degree of time and confidence. And I think confidence comes with time, or at least it should. Because when I first started doing nursing, I was very timid. And even when I called the doctor, even when I sent a fax to the doctor, I'm like, ooh, you know, am I missing something here? What are they going to think of me? Is this going to be a stupid request? And there comes to a point where you just don't give a shit what they say. You care about how it affects the patient.
Right.
And that's a great place to be. And I think we all get there at some point. It's just when we get there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did we get? Was that a tangent that we were on?
That was a very long tangent. We're talking about what we love about nursing, what makes us happy about nursing.
I had lost the plot for a second there. Okay, so my number one, now that we're a little ways into this conversation, we're rolling. I'm hot now. I love, this is a little bit different. This is maybe more like real specific, but I love snarky, crotchety but lovable old men. And old women too. But I really love, you know, the patient I'm talking about. The old man who everything you say, he's got some kind of joke. Sometimes they're a little on the crass side, but, you know, a little bit gruff. But, you know, deep down, they're like a nice person and you can like chip away at that shell. But I love snarky, grouchy old men. No one comes to mind specifically, but those are usually the patients that I can win over. Those are the patients that, like, at the end of the shift, when I'm, like, you know, wishing them well and introducing them to the next nurse, they go, "You're a good kid." And they, like, kind of give me the fist, the gentle fist to the chin. Those are the guys that I like, yeah. You know?
Those guys are kind of a challenge, right? You know,
yeah, talk about they are
whittling away or peeling back the onion layers of gruffness and years of old man, you know, not hate, but angry, grumpy old man yelling at people from their porch. And then they come into the hospital because they haven't seen, they've been to the doctor for 47 years. They're like, mm-hmm. "Who the hell are you?" And I'm like, "I'm your nurse today." And they're like, "Shit, I don't give a shit. Get out of my room." And that's how you start, you know, that's a hello. That's a, you know, when he says, "I don't give a shit," he's really saying, "Hi, my name is John."
Yes. And actually, I did think of an example. So I had this patient, he wasn't able to speak because of his condition. And I was assessing him for pain. And I said, you know, I said his name. Are you hurting anywhere? Is what I'll say to people. Like, because sometimes you say, are you experiencing pain? People go, what? So I just said, you know, I said, I'm going to call him Bob. Bob wasn't his name. Bob, are you hurting right now? And he kind of gave me like a shrug and a, like an eye roll. And I was like, what does that mean? Come on. Come on. And he kind of like, you know, swatted his hand like, "Don't worry about it, kid," was like what he was trying to say to me. And I was like, no, here's the thing. My responsibility is to make sure that you're okay. And if you're hurting, you're not okay. And I just took a minute, you know, I can't remember exactly. I mean, I'm like paraphrasing my interaction, but I basically, you know, I didn't just go, "Oh, okay. He's not having, all right, cool. Not having any pain, peace." I was like, "No, really, come on." Like, I would even go so far as to say to someone who's like really stoic, I'd be like, "I won't tell anybody. Like, I won't tell the missus. I'll give you a little Tylenol. Nobody has to know." And usually and usually they'll crack a smile and they'll be like, "Oh, okay, all right." And then they'll let me treat their pain. And, you know, it's enough to be a grouchy old man, but then to be a grouchy old man in pain, you're getting that Tylenol. I'm not going to force you, but I'm going to strongly encourage you.
I love that, Adrian. I love that. You're like, "I won't tell the missus. It'll be our little secret."
And then they're like, "The blonde nurse wants to do something." No, really, it's like I'm giving them PO Tylenol, but really, it's like this clandestine, like, "Okay, I'm going to go get the Tylenol. Shh, she's asleep on the couch. I'll just give this to you real quick.
I haven't felt this much excitement in 70 years. Oh my God.
And guess what? I got fresh applesauce so you can swallow it." Like, it's truly like old man nurse fantasy. I joke, but I love those patients that, you know, part of them you need to whittle away to get at the soft gooey nougat center.
Yes.
Is nougat gooey? I don't even know.
The soft candy,
the Tootsie Roll center. But, you know, also I like the sarcasm. It makes me giggle when, you know, when you're doing like an intake and you're like, you know, does anyone hurt you? Have you been hit or abused? And they're like, "Well, just the missus, but she's been doing it for 60 years, you know, and you know, they're kidding." Right. And then she's like, "Oh, Harold." And you're like, okay, clearly they're like needling each other. Of course I'm not assessing this with the wife at the bedside, but you know what I mean.
I know
when
what
they're
you
like
mean.
Joking
Stop
about,
it.
You... about marital discord. Once in a while he gets slapped with the purse or something, but
right.
So yeah, that's like one of my favorite things.
Do you ever get the old man that he'll cop a feel, he'll get a little pinch of the tush, and you'll turn around and give, you'll go, oh, and he'll just kind of give you this wink like, how you doing?
So it's the majority of the, it has happened. The majority of the times it's happened, it's been like a patient who's not totally cognizant of what they're doing. Like it actually happened on my last shift. It was actually really funny. It was totally innocent, but this gentleman, it was UTI situation, mildly confused. You know, it happens with our elderly. They get a little infection and they go a little, well, he was kind of clearing out of it. But anyway, I was tucking him into bed. I was getting everything done. And I went to reach. Okay, so imagine this. I went to reach to pull his pillow down because it like wasn't totally behind his head. So I like kind of reached an arm on either side of his shoulders. And I was like, here, let me pull your pillow down. But he's a little confused and like he's a friendly guy. And, you know, I didn't feel it was sexual in nature, but he like reached up to give me a hug and he kissed me on the cheek. Uh-huh. It was more granddad than
creepy.
I'm making a pass at you. Yeah. But it's usually stuff like that. Or like I'll be helping someone roll and they'll be like reaching for the bed rail, but they're like not totally able to move perfectly. So they'll like go to swing their arm over and like they catch a little boob. Usually when it happens, it's a younger individual and they're intending to do it, but you know, not really the old man population. It's usually like the so I don't mind it so much. Flip side,
you know, honestly, on the flip side, we guy nurses don't ever get experience like that, as far as I know. I've never gotten that, but I don't know. I guess I think it's sexy at work.
Well, here's the thing. And this is not, I mean, sometimes people just don't come across it. If you're lucky. I don't know that all male nurses. However, I was just reading something recently in one of the, I can't remember which forum it was in, but actually men in healthcare do experience kind of some sexual harassment. Like, for example, I've had old ladies, you know, like not just old ladies, but like, for example, I had an old lady who was the wife of my patient. A male nurse came in to help me turn him and she said, oh good, they brought the strapping young man. And you know, old lady speak for like, oh, young handsome guy, at the same time, like, I wouldn't want to be called, you know, I don't know what the female equivalent, like the dainty, not that women have to be dainty, but like, I don't know what the other gendered equivalent would be.
Yes.
But I wouldn't like it if somebody was like, oh, you brought the young supple nurse. Like, who wants that? I mean, really? Which I've started using a new face cream. So I do think I'm more supple, by the way.
Adrian. From now on, we're not allowed to use the word supple because I think that's in the same – it's the same category as moist.
Moist and moist. Supple.
Moist.
Which that's that. Those are the bastard cousins to the word taut. Which, oh my God, this brings me to a pet peeve. When people say his skin is taut. T-A-U-N-T. That's not the fucking word, people. Sorry, first F-bomb of the show. We're like a half hour in. That was pretty good for me, you guys. But yeah, when people say, the skin looks very taut. No, it doesn't. It's not taunting you.
Oh, is it it's part of taut. A haunted house now? Is that what
we're... Yes. Taunty.
Listen, you know, while we're talking, I actually have a third thing that we could kind of talk about a little bit when we when we talk about things that we love about nursing. I'm gonna switch gears a little bit, you know, get sappy, you know, and all that ooey gooeyness that we love so very much.
Do it.
But I want to talk about really the foundational reason why I became a nurse. And it comes from...
Because you look so good in scrubs.
Well, of course, I mean, you know it. You stop it. It's that...
Sorry, Sarah.
Genuine human connection that you get with people, right? You and it doesn't happen at the immediate beginning of your shift. It's often in times of terror or emergency, or it could be an end of life situation, or you just connect with them on a different level because you have the same interest that comes up in conversation. And you know what? There's this moment where you look at someone's eyes, you connect, and you just realize that, you know, first of all, I'm here for you as the patient, but you know what? If it was the other way around and I was in the bed, that they would probably do the same for me. And that is a very special feeling. And I think that is something that it honestly doesn't happen that often. But when we get that feeling, it's really what drives us to do what we do, because 99% of our job sometimes, or at least it feels like, is often very heavy and extremely emotionally exhausting, to say the least. What do you think?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I always find it sweet when my patients are protective of me, when my patients are like, honey, you look really tired. Have you been able to sit down? Or when people say things like, oh, you don't have to get that for me now. Like, it's fine. I can wait. You have other things to do. You know, when people are like looking out for me, and I always say to patients, it's kind of like my go-to phrase is I say, you tell me what you need and you let me do the time management. Okay. That's what I went to school for. And then people will usually be like, oh, okay, all right. But it's true. Like, you develop, and it doesn't happen with every patient. Sometimes you have patients that are nuts you can't crack, or people who it's just not in their personality to be, you know, that whatever, to make those connections with people that aren't family. But it is always nice when you know that, like, for example, there are these moments when I can tell a lot just from the way a person grasps my hand. I'm not a touchy-feely nurse in a sense that, like, I'm very handsy with people, but I am someone that if I'm standing at your bedside talking to you, it's my natural instinct that unless there's some reason why, like, I wouldn't do it with, like, a 22-year-old female, but if it's, like, an older patient or someone who's really sick, I'll just hold their hand while I'm talking to them. It's very casual. I'll just walk up to the bedside and I'll just kind of slide my hand into theirs. And I'll say, let's talk for a second, or whatever, you know, whatever I'm going to say. So it's nice when people grab your hand back, and I can't describe it. Other people might know what I'm talking about, but you can tell an emotion. You can either tell urgency and fear, or you can tell when someone's like, they don't want to let go. They're like, don't leave. But you also can tell when someone squeezes your hand. That's like, there's a thank you squeeze. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, sometimes it's just a brief kind of like, just a quick little hand squeeze. I mean, I feel crazy saying this, but I feel like there's a whole language in just like touching someone's hand like that. And so I think it's great when we have those patients that we can make the connection with. And on rescue, we see a lot of patients over and over again for many, many years. And so it makes it, I mean, that's a whole other topic there too. I should jot this down. When you genuinely care about your patients, like not just like, oh, I'm altruistic, like I care about my patients, but when you're like, I've known this person for 7 years, I've seen them 3 times a year, I've seen them almost die, I've seen them get better, I've seen them almost die again, and you have a different relationship. And those are people that, like, you know their spouses, you know their kids, you know their so I think that there's an entire hierarchy of like that connection with your patients.
Well, and I think that I don't want to make assumptions, but I'm going to assume anyway. I would say the average med-surg nurse, I mean, yes, they see frequent flyers, but rescue has a very different dynamic. I mean, you're talking about, and you say 3 times a year, and I know that in some cases it's more frequent than that.
Hell, oh yeah, and it's sometimes every other month. You know? Yeah, sometimes it's constant.
Yeah, yeah. And that, you know, who knows why that is? It could be just a person doesn't do their CBT or their treatments, and they're just in and out because of that population. That just because they have frequent lung infections.
You know, yeah, it is. And so I actually wrote that down. That I think should be like a whole other conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So is it my turn? Let's keep this flowing. We've got maybe another 20 minutes to record. So let's try to get a couple more in. Let's see. Another thing that I love. Oh, okay. I love, how do I want to word this? I love the ebb and flow of a nursing shift. So I don't like it when a shift is completely dead, when the Q word abounds and no call lights are going, because I work night shift. Okay. So there are periods of time. Yes, there's always something to be done, clean the unit, brush up on competencies, whatever, blah, blah, blah. We all know we don't do that. If you're having a busy shift and you get a chance to sit, you sit your ass down. But I don't like those shifts where it feels like I've been there for 38 hours because nothing is happening. I'm cold. I'm tired. My charting is done. The unit is stocked. Everything is, you know, there's literally not another thing I can do save waking people up to create work to do. Mm-hmm. Those nights are rare, but they happen. I hate those. I also hate the like balls to the walls night, which maybe I shouldn't use that phrase. I also hate the crazy nights where you don't get a chance to breathe, to think, to pee, to stop. I don't want that. I like the ebb and the flow. I like it when it's chill for a while. You can sit, have a conversation, drink some coffee, get your charting done, and then you get busy for a while, and then some time passes, and then you get another opportunity. So I really like that bedside nursing allows for that, because while you should always be helping your coworkers and staying busy, it's nice when you have those periods where your team's worked well together, everybody's turned, everybody's clean, everybody's had their medications, and you can just like chill for a minute. So it's that's like the perfect cycle for me, is that like ebb and flow of like, now it's busy, now it's quiet, now it's busy, now it's quiet. And I don't know if other people would agree with me on that, but that I feel is where I thrive, because I don't get sleepy, but I also don't get so sweaty that I hate being there.
I was thinking you reminded me of a little bit of a tangent here. You know, there are some things that we find very satisfying in nursing. Like, for instance, when you put in this glorious new IV, you put on this fresh dressing, or when you're when you're draining out or you're emptying out this really wicked drain. I'll give you an example. It's so gross. I had a guy that had a biliary JP drain, and it was – the drainage that was coming out was the most putrid, semi bloody, cloudy, slight brown drainage ever. My. It was so gross because he had a biliary cyst era, and so they were draining that. And then it was so satisfying, Adrian. They were having me flush it a little bit to keep it patent. And for whatever reason, I did something and I made that bad boy drain a good 300 mils of this, the ugliest shit that you've ever seen come out of a human being. And I don't know what it was, but it was like popping a zit that was jarring. You know those cyst videos. You know what I'm talking about.
And yeah, and those are ones that I usually watch for like 10 seconds because I'm like, yes. And then after 10 seconds, I'm like, I hate myself. I'm going to go.
It completely reminds me of something I got to tell you. So it completely off topic here, but in Traveler Talk, there's, you know, two populations. There's an agency side and there's a nursing side. And there's this guy, he created a video that showed based on some good ideas, like how to, you know, get out there. And what he did is think of things from a nursing perspective. He had some of his recruiters, like six of them, watch videos of things that we might encounter in our job, non-medical people watching some videos of our work. And,
it was
hilarious because I'm like, yeah, that looks about right. Yep. That looks about right. And then, but I'm watching them and half of them are nearly vomiting. And it was so satisfying to know that at bare minimum, I have an iron stomach at this point.
Yes.
I mean, at bare minimum, I can handle just about any icky thing that could possibly come my way. I think no matter what, I could take it.
Yeah, short of like disemboweling or something really horrific. I haven't seen a lot of traumas. I've seen a fair number of traumas, not as a nurse, but as a nursing assistant. Short of something really horrific, I think I could be just fine. I wish Brad was here to talk about this. I've only almost vomited at work once. And Brad was on the other side of the bed with me. It was a patient who, let's just say, their digestion wasn't happening. And so it was coming out the way it looked going in. Mm-hmm. And this person had a penchant for tacos. So imagine cleaning up. I'm not going to say anymore. It was horrific. It was the worst fucking smell I've ever smelled in my life. I am a taco lover. It was like the most life-ruining bed change of my life. And Brad, the patient, had no idea that I was literally about to vomit in the chucks with her. Ugh, it was so bad. It's the only time I've ever been that grossed out. And Brad sometimes will cite it at work. He'll be like, hey, remember taco poops? And he does it to mess with me. He does it to fuck with me. Because even now, I'm going to stop talking about it a second. Because even now, I'm kind of like, I'm there, I can smell it, and I'm feeling queasy. So that's the end of that. I'm like, I'm overly salivating. I feel like I need to spit in the trash can.
Oh, man. Okay, all here right, we go. I got another one. Another one. Here we go. It's in line with, after work breakfast, right? There is something to be said about the camaraderie and team effort of a good crew of people that you work with. There's something palpable there. It's like you're a well-oiled machine that is just, you're running back and forth, back and forth. You need me to do that for your patient. Yeah. Can you do this for my patient? Yeah. Okay. Team effort. Yes. Let's do this.
Yes. I love those nights.
Yes. And I absolutely love that. It brings me back to sports a little bit. It brings me back to football. There's just something so special about working with a great crew of people that I absolutely love.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at every time I look at the schedule to see who I'm working with before I go in, there's once in a while, there's a mix of people that, you know, not people that I don't like. I don't really have anybody on my unit that I don't like or that I can't get along with. But when it's either a group that's like not very talkative or they don't know each other very well, or we've got a lot of floats and so we don't have a dynamic, those can kind of mess with those kinds of nights where you're just like, everybody's getting stuff done. It also helps when you've got nurses that have been there like 3 or 4 nights and everybody knows every patient. Like, you don't even need report. You're just like, oh, I got it. I had her 3 nights ago. It's cool. I'll get her to the bathroom. And it's just like, it's those perfect nights when just everything gets done. And, yeah, man, I would like to have one of those nights tonight. I'm not going to name names, but I think I have a very good crew tonight. And it's, I will probably leave for work in about a couple hours. Doug's on his way home with the puppy. And so it's going to get loud then. But sorry, that was a tangent. But yes, love, absolutely love that. And we did a whole, for our new listeners, if people are sticking around for my craziness this long, we did an episode on night shift breakfast, post shift breakfast. So dig back a little bit. I can actually say that now. Dig back a little bit into our archives. We have a little bit of archives.
How many episodes do we have now, Adrian?
I think at the time of this recording, we have 14 episodes up, plus like 2 or 3 little quickie episodes that are just a few minutes long. So, and then more recording is on the way. So,
And you're branching out a little bit. You're out doing some outreach. There's some people that are interested in talking to you on the show.
Yes, yes. And so it's been very slow going because, as I mentioned in a previous episode, I had just like a few weeks of just like kind of chaos in my life where I wasn't really communicating with people online as well as I could have been. but the recovery efforts continue. And so I will be doing another episode this week with someone that I'm very excited to talk to. And I'm not going to say anymore because I don't want to give anything away. So that'll be upcoming. And then there are a couple.
Super secret.
And then also I'm trying to convince a few of my coworkers who I think would be fantastic on the show, but they're a little shy. They're microphone shy. And so they're like, I don't know, it's going to be weird. And I'm like, here's the thing. I wish that I could have conversations with fellow nurses and record it without telling them, because some of them are like, just don't tell me. And I'm like, yeah, but see, that's illegal. I can't just record conversations. And then plus, how creepy would that be if I came up to people and was like, yeah, hey, you know that awesome conversation we had last Tuesday? I recorded the whole thing. Would you mind if I posted it online? Right. And people are going to be like, what the fuck? No. Yes. So it's this conundrum that I'm in, because I feel like I'd have some really great interviews, but people are like, I don't do well with interviews. And I'm like, it's not an interview, it's a conversation. Just have a conversation with me. Right. We just happen to have a tape recorder running. So right. I'm chiseling away at those folks, but in the meantime, I have a lovely group of people that are not microphone shy that are like, let's do this. So
yes. So tell me about you're a numbers lady like myself. Tell me about some of the things that you're seeing.
Yes. And again, I need to do some more research to figure out if there's a better way to gather statistics, because I can really only see statistics from the website that hosts our RSS feed. And according to that, we're like approaching, I think, 600 hours. No, hold on. Let me look. So I'm not inflating.
600 hours.
Hold on. It might be closer to five. Let me look. Don't see, this is why I have my beautiful little iPhone in my hands, because without it, it's like, I just make things up. I'm like, I don't know. So if I look at our statistics, which this is just one platform, and this is only for people who listen to it on this platform, it doesn't count the like six other platforms that we're on, but we're approaching 500 hours of listen time. And let me add this up. And we have over like 1,000 downloads on this platform, like closer to 1,100 downloads. So people are paying attention. We've gotten several reviews on Facebook, which they've all been good reviews. I'm really excited that we haven't drawn in any haters yet. And we've got a couple iTunes reviews. It's kind of slow going, but I get a lot of verbal feedback from people. I get a lot of comments about or texts or whatever. And then I always feel like the a-hole that's like, okay, can you put that in writing and put it on the internet? Because I love hearing you say that, but I need proof. So again, I'll make my pledge drive. It's not a pledge drive. I'll make my comment and rating drive appeal again, and just say, like, guys, go to one of our platforms and say something nice about us. Say something mean about us. Just say something. Just tell anything. Me. Just give me
tell
some
me,
feedback.
Tell me anything. I need to know this information, please.
I need to know right. Because I like what we're doing. I like the topics we're choosing. I like the direction we're going. It's a constant. I mean, it's like uphill growth right now. So it's constantly changing. I've changed the intro. I'm changing the profile photos. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm trying to make it look pretty. The website, yes. I just dressed up the website, so you can check out medroomchronicles.com. There's all this stuff that I've been doing, and I want people to give me a high five online for it. So
I was thinking of, because I know you probably have to get going very soon for your dinner, yes?
Yes, soon, yes.
I was thinking about the last topic that we could really hit home.
Sure. What you got?
I was thinking along the lines of the satisfying element of the IVs and the drains is it is very satisfying when we see the effect of our nursing care on patients. And I'll give you an example of that.
Yeah.
it's so simple, right? When a patient's lungs fill up with fluid, and when normal people hear that, they're like, oh, God, what? I'm like, yeah, it's just a little fluid. I mean, everybody's got a little fluid in their lung. No big deal. We'll just get a little Lasix action and just go to town, right? But there's something to be said about that. It's like, okay, you recognize their lungs are filling up, their sats are dropping a bit, they're a little more tachypneic. And then you give them, you suggest that med to the physician. They're like, yeah, sounds good. Looks like their kidney function's okay. They've been peeing. Okay, let's give them 20 of IV Lasix right now. 2 hours later, their lungs are fine. They're sleeping like a baby. And look at you. You've just made a difference in someone's life by potentially preventing pneumonia. And their lungs are feeling better. So it's like stuff like that is very satisfying. When you make connections in a patient's situation, you recommend treatment, you take action upon it, and people, you know, benefit from that. And that's very appealing to me.
And then not only do you feel the joy of knowing that that person is doing better and that they're not suddenly on a one-way ticket to ICU, but also then I feel like then, you know, other, at least the team that I work with, people are like, good catch, or tell me how you figured that out, because I want to be able to catch that next time, or whatever the case may be. And then you walk a little taller, you know what I'm saying? You got a little bounce in your step. People are like, hey, can you help me turn my patient? And you're like, yes, I can, because I am having a good night.
Yes.
And then, you know, when you're really lucky and, you know, I don't want to humble brag here, but I got a nomination for a Daisy Award along with two of my coworkers, who I'm not going to name them because I don't know if I have their permission, but basically our nurse manager got 3 Daisy Award nominations all in the same week. And so that, for those who don't know, Daisy Award, it was, you know, started on behalf of a patient. I don't know a lot about the award, but it's basically like the way that families and patients can recognize a nurse for doing something extraordinary. And so we all got a little Daisy nomination. And with it came a note from the family. This was from like over a year ago, that they just, after a year of,
what?
Yeah, they just wrote, it was dated just a couple months ago. But this patient, I remember the patient, I remember the family. It was a really special experience. It resulted with a lot of kind of peace and closure for a family. That's all I'll say. But they basically wrote about me and they said that they were able to do certain things because they trusted me and because they knew that I was going to, and literally the phrase they used was, she kept her promise. And I don't promise a lot. There are things you cannot promise. You cannot promise people will get better. You cannot promise therapies will go a certain way. But I promise I'm attentive. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And if I can't do it, I'm going to tell you as soon as I figure out I can't do it. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is, the warm fuzzy that I felt from having, and it doesn't even have to be an official award, just someone saying to me, you did a really good job there, or that's the most beautiful IV dressing I've seen in a long time. Or even when your patient, this is my in this category of like really feeling good about things. We see people with a lot of chronic pain, and our hospital beds, though supposedly comfortable and good for pressure relief, people can't get comfortable. And when you've got an injury and you're sick and you're not at home, it's hard to get comfy. But when I can go into a patient who's been restless and they've been like kicking the pillows off and like, you know, they just seem like they're uncomfortable. You can tell that they're just not settled and they're in distress. And then you go in, you dose medication appropriately, you tuck the pillows just so, you say the right things, you change the environment of the room, at least this for me at night, you know? And then that patient looks calm and they fall asleep, even if it's only for a short time. Those are the victories where I'm like, fuck yeah, I tucked those pillows just where they needed to be. And I've even said, and here's how much more ridiculous this gets. I've even said to patients that are like, let me reposition you. And they're like, yeah, we tried that. It doesn't work. And I say, let me try it. And I'll usually try to make a joke out of it.
I've got like, you.
And I always say, if you hate it, we can undo it. But yeah. Let me try, because this is one of my skills. Which is true. I feel like I am the ergonomic pillow tucker. Because here's the thing. You should see my bed. I sleep with like 758,000 pillows when I'm alone in the bed.
Yes.
So, that's so funny. I know where those pillows need to go.
That is so funny. You know, I was just thinking, first of all, I can imagine you someone saying that and you giving them this like slight wave of your hair. Oh, I've got you, boo. I've got you. Okay. Let me take care of your pillow needs. I'm Nurse Adrian.
Well, now you're making it creepy. Now you're making it weird.
I think it's super awesome. But I was also thinking, I could totally relate to this, because I had a guy that in nursing school, and he had like osteoarthritis / RA / all of his bones swollen, and his neck was screwed up. And, you know, we just couldn't get this guy comfortable. But little burp action. By the time I was done with him, I had the same mentality. I was like, oh, I got you, sir. Let me take care of you. And it was like he was in a throne of pillows, and he slept like a baby. You know, it's so funny. We talk about the things that we do with meds, but we don't talk about the independent nursing actions that we do that really make a difference, right?
Big on non-pharmacological methods. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Those interventions are so vital. Like all the shit that you do that's not just pumping shit into people's veins.
Yes.
Which sometimes you have to do that.
Yes.
But yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll give an example. We use a lot of narcotics, muscle relaxers, gabapentin, Tylenol, et cetera, in trauma. But something very simple is heat packs. I mean, heat packs are a dime a dozen. They don't cause respiratory depression or constipation or any of those other crazy side effects of narcotics too. And it's amazing what a little heat can do to people, or a little reposition, or simply, you know, holding someone's hand when they are in pain.
And honestly, the other thing is that I'm sorry, but I will always argue this. Okay, you could be having the busiest freaking shift of your life, mm-hmm. and you need to think about long-term versus short-term. There are some circumstances where you can't stop to do extra stuff, but I am a proponent of therapeutically rubbing the thing that is hurting. Okay, so if somebody is telling me my lower back is killing me, honest to God, I'm going to rub your back for 3 to 4 minutes. It might only be 3 to 4 minutes, but that is going to, one, it's going to show you that I give a shit enough to stop for 3 to 4 minutes when I'm sweating and running. Mm-hmm. And two, yeah, those are 3 to 4 minutes that maybe I could spend doing something else. But that also might alleviate 3 or 4 call lights. That might alleviate that patient feeling like I'm not paying attention to them. And that might settle them down. Mm-hmm. So there is so much to be said for thinking about, can I take an extra 120 to 240 seconds and potentially make the rest of my night a little bit better? So, and then also the layering. We are going to take a multimodal approach. You say that shit to people and they're like, oh, a multimodal approach. I'm going to give you Tylenol, or fill in the blank of whatever the appropriate pain reliever is. I'm going to give you Tylenol. I don't say I'm going to turn you. I say I'm going to fluff your pillows. I'm going to put a heat pack. And then when the heat pack has been on for this amount of time, then we're going to do a little bit of a night. You know, you make it sound like you have created a luxury package of pain relief for them. You don't just say you want a heat pack, because people go, no, that doesn't work. Well, when was the last time you had a heat pack? I haven't. Well, then how the fuck do you know it doesn't work?
Honestly, Adrian, at the same time, I lack in adding those sexy adjectives to my package.
Multimodal approach.
I honestly, I've never said multimodal because I don't know.
This is where nurses have to be salespeople. You have to say, "Oh, you don't want to take your warfarin for your AFib with RVR." Well, you know what? Let's talk about why this is exactly what you want. For $9.99, you too cannot die of a deadly arrhythmia. So you've got to find, you may not have sexy ways of doing it, but you might have your own approach. Whatever that is, you might not even realize what it is.
I do have an approach. I take a lot of time explaining to them the risk benefit type of thing.
Yeah.
But don't get me wrong. If people are still going to be a little stupid and not take their AFib or not take their cardiac meds or not put on their oxygen, don't get me wrong. I've gone down the road or not wear their braces. Here's a good example. Let's talk about a trauma population that's like, I don't want to wear my PMT collar anymore. Oh, I don't want to wear my TLS. SO brace. And I'm like, okay, you have a C1 fracture, sir. Hey, don't get me wrong.
How do you feel about moving your arms?
Adrian, this is medicine. I'm telling you, this would work every single time. They're like, you simply just say, you know what? Do you not want an erection ever again? And it works every single time, I guarantee you, no matter what age.
For our penis having.
Obviously for females, that's not going to work. But when you talk about how it's going to affect the penis, I'm telling you, it works every time, all the time, every day, 365, baby. And I've only had to go there once because this person was extremely stubborn, but you better believe it shut him up. And ultimately,
Boom.
But this guy was being so stupid. I'm like, you need this on. Do you want to walk again? Do you want to? And so anyway, I don't like going down that road because I feel like there's a better way. But sometimes people just need there tough is. Love. And, but, and you know, giving it to people, they need it.
The other thing that I'll say, it's the same approach that I take when I feel like a physician isn't listening to me. I say something like, I find this really kind of troubling, or I'm really worried about you, or that kind of scares me that you won't do that. I mean, if we're to the point where they're like really refusing something that's very important, mm-hmm. then I have no problem saying that really makes me worried. Like, as your mm-hmm. nurse, you're kind of mm-hmm. scaring me by making that choice. I encourage you, like, you can make that choice. But I've even said, I think I once with a patient, I was joking around with him and we had a really good rapport, but I actually used a phrase that you used in one of our earlier, a statement that you used in our earlier episodes. And you said, if a nurse and a team of doctors are telling you to do something, it's probably in your best interest to do it. Like, if we're trying to help you not die, probably you should listen to us. So I said that to a patient. He was like, well, he was joking around and he was like, well, do I have to take that? And I was like, because a team of doctors had just rounded and mm-hmm. he was like, well, should I do that? And I said, if a team of doctors all agree that this is the best thing for you, they're not getting paid any extra regardless of what answer they give you. Like, they're being serious. Like, and people usually go, oh yeah. Because if you say, I'm your nurse and I think you should do this, they're like, well, who the fuck are you? You're just a nurse. Go get me my juice. But some people, if you're like, you're making me or I've even said to patients that won't wear their BiPAP, and actually it works. Oh my God. I have to be really careful about how I say it and who I say it to, but it's worked 3 times in the last like 60 days on me, which is pretty good. Cause usually the success rate is 0. When people don't want to wear their CPAP, they don't. But I will even say to people like I had a lady who was like desatting pretty hardcore. And I said to her, I was like, I mean, I talked to her, we'd done education, she agreed at one point, and then when it was time to actually put the mask on, she was like, hell no. Well, she kept desatting, and I went in the room, I let the alarm keep going off, and I turned the monitor to her, and I said, I don't want to have to code you tonight, will you please wear your mask? And I don't usually take those scare tactics, but yeah. She was like getting into the 70s with a good pleth. Yeah. And so I was like, once you get to that, like 80, 70, 74. So no, you're like, I'm setting up the ambu bag, honey. So you probably should put your mask on.
Yeah.
Like, don't make me do this. Like there is, or I'll say to people like, the road out of the hospital is through that mask. So let's figure out what you need, because you don't realize how, because there's, on one hand, there's the scariness of like, are you actually going to suffocate in your sleep because you're a stubborn SOB? And then on the mild end, it's, I have been silencing your pulse oximetry alarm every 30 seconds for the last 9.5 hours. Put on the fucking mask. Yes. Like, so wherever I am on that spectrum, I try to do really good education. I try to give them the benefit of the doubt. But then I'm basically like, do you see that number on the monitor? That's supposed to be like 25 points higher than it is right now. So, and I'm always calm. I never go in and I'm like, oh my God, you got to put your mask on. But I'm like, as your nurse, this is the time. Like now.
And for hours,
not for 20 minutes. They'll be like, oh, I'm done. I wore it.
I wish people saw your facial reaction, because I'm gonna see if I can describe it. you just gave me kind of a, please, really, you wore it, please, come on. You did 10 minutes.
I know I've explained to you about 40 times how this works, and you like, we've been over this.
We need to get to a point where we're just going to record these, right? That's what's going to happen.
What that means is I just need to clean my room. I mean, we could post this. I have no, but okay. So the room that I'm in right now is my lab, my quote unquote. I have my makeup table to the left. I have my crammed full art supply table to the right. My desk in front of me and my closet behind me.
Is this the official studio at this point?
No, this is just my den / office / woman cave. I have much prettier places in my house I could record, but this is just where my computer always happens to be sitting. So.
Oh, I see. Okay. Cause I feel like every time we talk, I'm in a different location of your house.
Yes. It just, you know, I'm a weird creature. I sometimes work in the kitchen, sometimes on the couch, in bed. But when I'm doing this sort of thing, I like to have a table, because otherwise my camera would be jostling all over the place. So I'm really doing it so that you don't get seasick talking to me.
Right.
So I can post this as long as people aren't in the comments like, God, clean your room. Because really, it's my makeup table and my art supplies, which, you know, it's just a lot of.
Do you have to get going for work?
Let's see. It is 5 to 5. I'm already dressed. All I have to do is put on scrubs and go. So I've got a little more time. The thing that's killing me right now is my stomach is growling. Like if I put my microphone down to my stomach, it would be scary. It's monster growly. All right, guys. I think that's a pretty good list. Yeah. That was pretty good for things we love about nursing part 1.
And I want to apologize from the depths of my heart, because I was a total and utter zombie when we first started. I'm like, hi, my name is Andrew. And so needless to say, I am much awake now.
You're fantastic. You're a good sport for hopping out of bed and on the mic. I will say though, it keeps adding to the authenticity of this show. We are not in a recording studio. We are not scripting these things. This is real life. We are actual nurses. So that's what I keep preaching. So we've like tried to record when you were driving state to state with mixed results because of reception. We've done it when you've been out of town and you've had to go to the big box mart at 5 a.m. to get a headset. I've recorded in the car. I've recorded when I'm still in my robe. I've recorded before work, after work, on the way to work. So far we have not gotten any hate mail about the casualness of our recordings, but this is real life. This is what it's like to be a nurse. Sometimes you oversleep, and initially Just to wrap it up, to share with our listeners, I think I actually sent you kind of a mad text message. I was like, I got out of bed for this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was very offended, Adrian. Clearly, I'm so offended right now. But I felt, no, I get it.
And then like 5 seconds after I sent it, I was like, well, I oversleep all the time. It's the life of a night shift nurse. It happens. So.
Right. Yeah.
So thanks to all of our forgiving listeners and our family and friends who put up with our erratic, crazy ass sleep cycles. I told Doug, right, I have no circadian rhythm left. I slept for 17 hours on my day off. I got up to pee once.
That kind of sounds like a nurse. Yeah, we're all over the place. But, you know, I'm amazed that you said what you said 500-600 hours now. I mean, we're
in the 480s. So we're approaching
480s. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty solid. And when we started this like 2 months ago.
Yeah, the first recording was September 6th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is amazing.
Almost exactly 2 months ago.
Yeah, it's just been progressively growing and growing, and I really don't see why it will stop unless we stop doing it. Yeah.
unless I just continue to oversleep and not get episodes posted. Right.
So I am very excited to keep doing this. I hope folks find it entertaining. Same. And I really enjoy it. And I hope it find it not only entertaining, but also helpful in some fashion, kind of a way to, come into our world, enjoy our experiences, and maybe learn something and maybe just feel better about your nursing practice, because we are real people here. We are real people. We talk about, interesting and just real topics that we all face as nurses, and I hope that people find it helpful.
Agreed. And I just, on a final note before we say goodbye, I would just like to point out, our listeners won't see this unless we actually post video on YouTube, but we started this call in daylight. It is now 5 o'clock in the Midwest, and you are almost in entire darkness. I can only see your face from the glow of your TV screen, and yes, my twinkle lights behind me are starting to gain some luminosity. Yes. But I just want to say, this is you guys, everybody else is getting home, having dinner with their families, winding down. The moon is up and it is time for me to go. So
yep.
All right. Well,
thank you, Adrian, and thanks for having me talk with you today, and I look forward to our next talk later on.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. Go to medroomchronicles.com and find us everywhere that we exist on the internet. Listen, share, and for the love of God, give us some comments. All right, that's all I'll say. Peace out, guys. Happy nursing. Right.
Medroom Chronicles, we may be uncensored, but we are not unfiltered. Protected health information has been changed and concealed to comply with HIPAA of 1996. The things we talk about are combinations of years of experience with thousands of patients, things we've read, stories we've heard. If you think we're talking about you, trust me, we're not. Also, we're real nurses here to provide accurate and helpful info, but don't take us as fact without doing your own research. Refer to your state's Board of Nursing, Practice Acts, and your institution's policies and procedures if you have questions about your practice. Lastly, our very strong opinions are ours alone and do not reflect those of our employers or educational institutions. Thanks for listening, and happy nursing, guys.